Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Distilling, not a simple process. It involves a lot of machinery, a lot of exact science, a little art, and a lot of patience. But it's a fascinating topic with a long history behind it, and we will delve into it right here on Food Friday. We're joined today by a guy who started out as an unpaid intern, Scott Lunning. Is with Yankee Distillers in Clifton Park, and he has done a lot of distilling and a fair amount of drinking. He knows his spirits. If you have a question for Scott, I should say, change my script, about distilling, spirits, and holiday nightcaps, the number to call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Tweet us at WAMC Radio. Actually, you should probably tweet us directly to WAMC Vox Pop. That makes it a little easier. Our producer is out today, so I'll be trying to monitor that while I do the show, which is always fun. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number to call, 800-348-2551. Scott Lunning, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here, and we've sampled your wares from Yankee Distillers, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But your history is an interesting one. So Matthew Jaeger started the Albany Distilling Company in 2012, and you had a job completely different than that.
Well, yeah. It was still science, but it was silicon science versus alcohol science.
That's amazing. So you were in the microchip business?
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. What prompted you to say, God, I've had enough of this. I want to be a distiller.
Oh, boy. I like whiskey.
Okay, check.
That's one good thing.
Now, I'm with you there, but I'm not ready to give up broadcasting, although many have suggested I do just that.
I kind of wanted to do something tangible with my hands, and I'm also a big believer in the local movement, the local food movement, making things as local as you can.
Yeah.
And this was an opportunity to do that. The process really interested me, and so I went down to Albany Distilling and took their tour and came back the following week. And
this is while you're still working.
Yeah. This was a couple of years ago. Came back the following week and said, "Hey, I'm really interested in the process, and maybe we could work something out. You seem like you could use some help." And they said, "Oh no, we're a startup. We can't pay anybody." And I said, unpaid intern.
Cha-ching.
And they said, "We can work something out."
That's funny. So then, fast forward, Matthew said, I'm going to do my own thing now.
Well, actually, it was always my plan to start Yankee Distillers.
Yeah.
And so during the process of working with the guys at Albany, it just sort of evolved that Matthew and Johnny Curtin, who were the two founders down there, they decided that they could work, they wanted to work in different directions.
Yeah.
And so Matt decided to come with me up to Clifton Park and start Yankee Distillers.
Okay, so when did you actually start?
Well, we've been in the facility there in Clifton Park since January.
Okay.
So about a year, but a lot of that was facilitization, equipment hookup. We've been open to the public for 4 months, a little over 4 months there now.
And we are talking to Scott Lunning today of Yankee Distillers in Clifton Park. So technically, you are a farm distillery. Is that the designation?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yep. Okay, now what does that entail? What does the state law say you have to be?
Yeah, there's a few things involved, but the main thing is to use a majority of New York State raw material for your agricultural input.
Yeah.
The law actually says 75%. We're proud to use 100% of New York State grain for our unmalted grain.
Okay, so you brought a bottle, and I got to say, it's excellent. Yankee Distillers Rye, and we've had a tasting in the newsroom in the past hour and a half. And it's really good. So all of that rye is from New York?
Yeah, that's correct. Mostly it's out in the Finger Lakes region now, but we're actually looking to move it even closer into Saratoga County.
Mm.
So we're talking to local Saratoga County farmers about contracting specific crops with them so that we take some of the financial risk up front in case, superstorm Sandy whatever comes along. But also, you know, we get a locked-in supply. And more importantly, I mean, it builds a community here. And we can go to them with special requests. You know, grow us a specific variety of rye.
And you say there are only, you told me in the green room there were 16 varieties? Only 16?
Yeah, something, 16 or 18 varieties of rye. It's not a developed grain in terms of you know, the genetic breeding that has gone on over the years with, say, for instance, wheat.
It's funny, you know, rye, I think, is an underappreciated whiskey, or it has been until recently.
Yeah.
And you made mention of the fact that a lot of the farmers will just plow the rye under.
Yeah, right. A lot of them grow it as just a cover crop,
just
to keep the dirt in place. And then we'll come along and say, hey, if you'll combine that and clean it up, we'll buy it from you and make fine whiskey out of it.
Well, I must say, it really does taste good, and it's only, I don't want to say only, but it's about a year, aged a year now?
Yeah, a year in the barrels for this batch.
And when you buy a commercial rye, it's 3 or 4 years?
Typically, the big guys stay longer in the barrel. That's going to be a point of contention for a long time.
Okay, why?
Well, One thing right off the bat, they've got a vested interest in creating a barrier to entry for
new
smaller
companies.
Competitors.
Sure.
Right? If they've got a big pipeline full of whiskey already, you know, it's to their benefit to convince people that it's not good whiskey unless it's 4 or 5 years old, because nobody can really start a business and look forward to selling your first product in 4 or 5 years. But more importantly, we're very, very careful about what we put in the barrel.
Right.
And it's fairly well known that if you take a whiskey with some jagged edges on it, you put it in a barrel long enough, it'll smooth out. That's fine.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing, but it takes a lot of time. Whereas we are very, very careful in our processing, from our grain sources to our the way we process it to how we treat it at every step in the way, so that we don't need that smoothing of the jagged edges part to go on.
Well, I think the general consensus in the newsroom is it has a very mature, rounded taste and nice nose to it. It's a little spicy and then sweet and very tasty indeed. And I've had more than a few ryes in my time. And however, that said, this being fairly young, are you going to keep a couple barrels off to the side?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. We're going to build up a pipeline, and we you know, unfortunately, somebody has to taste it all the way along.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's one of the occupational hazards.
Yeah, that's right. And we actually believe that whiskey can stay too long in oak, and people have kind of been biased by the whole Scotch thing, which is a completely different deal, where they have 15, 20, 25-year aging periods. To make an American whiskey in a brand-new charred American white oak barrel, if you put it in a barrel for 20 years, it's going to taste like licking a tree. You know, it's going to go too far.
Okay, can I just say that I've had now in my life 2 bottles of Pappy 23. It's fabulous.
It's nice.
It's fabulous.
It's nice.
All right, let's go to the phones and 1-800-348-2551. Matilda in Clifton Park, you're first. Hi, Matilda. Hello.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
I was wondering, does it matter how big the barrel is when you're aging it?
Yeah, actually it does, and that's an interesting part of the supply chain right now, in that a smaller barrel will have a greater surface area to volume ratio, and so there'll be more interaction with the wood, and you'll actually get a, quote, faster aging process.
Huh, interesting.
So smaller barrels, they're less efficient in terms of floor space, in terms of cost, but they speed up the aging process.
So it's somewhat surface area to the volume of the liquid?
Yeah, but it's also not a clean science, because there are several things that go on in the barrel, and they happen at different rates. Some of them are strictly time dependent. Some of them are this surface area to volume ratio. So it's a pretty rough thing to say that it ages faster in a smaller barrel, but roughly speaking, that's true.
Matilda, that's a great question and a very specific one. Are you distilling on your own?
No, actually, I'm not. I was just wondering because me and my family were big on this kind of thing.
Well, it's a very great question. Thanks for starting us off today.
Thank you.
Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Scott Lunning is our guest, who started as an unpaid intern and now is a distiller, for Pete's sake. It's very exciting work. What else are you guys going to distill? I want to say brew up, but it's only in a generic way. What else are you going to make?
Yeah. Well, we have this rye. We make a bourbon whiskey of roughly the same age.
Mm-hmm.
We do make a rum, but because of the legal status of the New York State raw materials, we can't sell it or taste it at our location.
Because molasses is not a real commodity you get in New York.
That's right. Sugarcane does not grow well in New York State. And we also just made, actually a couple of weeks ago, we made our first vodka. It's our first time making that.
Using all state?
Yep. New York Finger Lakes Wheat.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it benefited from our learning curve because we put it through the still so many times as we were learning how to make vodka.
All right, hold that thought about the number of times that you okay. put it through the distilling, because there's a lot of advertising mumbo-jumbo out there about that.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you about it. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. It's Food Friday. We talked distilling today with Scott Lunning of Yankee Distillers. We'll be right back with more of your calls.
Support for WAMC comes from Kingsway Community Schenectady. Offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including assisted living, memory care, and more, caring in the family tradition, kingswaycommunity.com. Bread and Butter, newly opened restaurant in North Amherst Mill District, offering breakfast and lunch daily from traditional staples to chef specialties such as duck confit hash and maple sriracha pork belly, breadandbutteramherst.com. Gloriosa & Company, Ashfield, Massachusetts, planning and catering weddings, showers, reunions, and other gatherings indoors or out at the Curtis House with 3 rooms available or at a variety of venues around the area, gloriosaco.com. And Bread Alone Bakery, Kingston, celebrating 32 years of certified organic handcrafted breads with a new space open for breakfast, brunch, lunch, or a late snack on Route 9 West between Kingston and Saugerties, breadalone.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551, the number. We talk distilling today with Scott Lunning of Yankee Distillers. But before we do that, let's get a news update. Ian, some brewing news from the, not from the Capitol, but pertaining to the Capitol of New York.
It will certainly echo in the Capitol. Former New York State Senate leader Dean Skelos and his adult son have been convicted of charges that the once powerful Republican used his office to extort about $300,000 in salary and other benefits for the son. The federal jury in Manhattan reaching the verdict this afternoon after the public corruption trial that featured wiretap recordings of conversations between Skelos and his son Adam. Prosecutors said the tapes were proof the pair schemed behind the scenes to pressure 3 companies into agreeing to employ his 33-year-old son. The defense argued Skelos was merely a loving father eager to take care of his only child, not a politician on the take. This comes after former Assembly Speaker Shelley Silver also found guilty on his corruption trial, and it means Dean Skelos is automatically expelled from the Senate. Thanks, Ray.
Thank you, Ian Pickus, our news director. You'll be following that, and we will have more for you during Northeast Report. I assume the Skelos could use a stiff drink right about now. And, we're talking distilling here on Vox Pop with Scott Lunning. And before we get back to the calls, and Mike in Cornwall, you'll be next, so hang in there. Let's get back to the distilling of vodka. Now, you see all the big brands. Twice distilled, 4 times distilled. You went 6 times. What's the difference?
Yeah, it turns out distilled this many times is an uncontrolled term
okay.
on labels.
All right, what does it mean?
And so, well, everybody can sort of decide for themselves.
Well, distilling is a specific process, though, right?
Yeah, but it depends on what sort of equipment you have. I mean, it's possible that if you had an 8-plate column, you could call that 8 times distilled, because in a sense, each chamber of the distilling column performs a little bit of a redistillation. I don't know how other people use that term.
Yeah. You filter it as well?
Yeah.
So by the time you're done, there's no taste at all, right? Isn't that the deal?
That's the idea.
What's the point?
That's a good question. Okay. But maybe one of our callers can tell us.
But as far as vodka goes, you find that it's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we actually worked 3 weeks on this vodka between the distillation. We put it through the entire still 6 times. Then we charcoal filtered it, gravity fed 5 times.
Huh.
It came out really clean. Really, almost the only thing left is a mouthfeel.
Okay.
There's sort of a creamy mouthfeel.
You might as well have water, right?
Well, except for.
All right, I'm with you. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Mike in Cornwall. Mike, you're on.
Yes, I wanted to ask you, do you do anything with gin at all?
Now you're speaking my language, Mike. Vodka, not so much. Gin, yeah.
Actually, at Yankee Distillers, gin is not on our program. It was originally, and then talking to other distillers, because we're a community now, and we discovered, or we were told several times on good authority, that once you make gin in a still,
that still is now going to do gin only.
That's right. The next thing you make in that still, even if you want it to be vodka or whiskey, is going to taste like gin.
Oh, how about that?
Could I just add, what is the difference between straight London gin and Jennifer gin? And is Jennifer gin getting a bad rap today from the importers or what?
Isn't that the old Dutch style?
You know, I'm not a gin guy, so I'm going to have to defer to you.
I think
Ray.
It is. Now, I mean, I like the London dry style, and so I don't go too much for the real floral. I think it has to do with the botanicals used. And I think I think the London, and again, I'm not an expert on this, except that I like Bombay, not so much, but Beefeater and Brokers and some of those. But I think it's the quantity of juniper, and then...
The other botanicals. Okay.
Right. And they all have a proprietary recipe, but I think the Londons all have sort of the same base.
Right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, and thank you for calling, Mike. 1-800-348-2551. This came in via email from Clea. I like recipes, if possible, using 2 different liquors, not in the same drink. Pear-flavored vodka, which I don't really care for, but I have a bottle and I'd like to use it up. Also, other things to go with scotch other than my regular soda water. Thanks so much for the show. Any comments on mixing drinks?
Well, actually, I'm not a bartender. I'm a distiller.
I got a great app on my iPhone. It's called Mix. I forget what it's called. Is it Mixologist? And it's great. You just put the ingredients in, and it'll come up with a list of drinks.
Right, right. We are able to shake cocktails in our tasting room.
Yeah.
Up in Clifton Park. But we tend to keep our cocktails pretty simple because we don't want to cover up the flavors that we've worked so hard to get into the spirit to begin with.
Yeah, no, I see that. And I would think, getting back to gin for a moment, and Dominic in Albany, you'll be next. I would think the gin is a rather difficult thing to master because there's some bad gin out there, and bad gin is very bad.
And there's a lot of ways to make it.
Yeah.
Actually, there's no... In my experience, there's no accepted point in the process to put in the botanicals. Some people throw them in the mash,
some
in the main
pot.
Some vapor
infuse them. I think that Bombay does that.
Right. Yeah. At different points in the process. You can do it early between the pot and the column. You can do it after the column. There's a lot of variables there.
Yeah. We had on this program a year or two ago the Berkshire Distillers. Berkshire Mountain, I think, distillery.
Mm-hmm.
A great straight gin. They had make a couple of different varieties of gin, but their straight gin was really excellent. And it was so good that I'm like, wow, I can't believe it's from around here. It was excellent, world-class stuff. Dominic in Albany. Dominic, you're on.
Hi, yeah. Man, this conversation is speaking directly to what my question is. I've enjoyed beer and wine for the flavor for a long time, and I've found whiskey, scotch, rye, all that to be a little bit more difficult to access, but I also found that it's very rewarding. And I've always been curious what the difference is in the distilling process that makes the flavors. And you guys were talking about the vodka, the more you distill it, the less flavor it has. I don't seem to get that with whiskey. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Well, you only distill it once, right? With the brown whiskeys.
Yeah, we actually do a single pass process. There are some places that will do what's called a stripping run and a spirits run. So two passes through the still for whiskeys. I'd say people are about evenly split on which one of those is preferable. Some people will claim single pass has a better nose, but double pass has a better taste, or you know, it's an area of debate.
But the barrel is what gives it its color, and
that's correct. Everything comes off the still crystal clear.
Right,
vodka, rum, whiskey, anything comes off the
even rum.
Yep,
amazing.
Oh yeah. Because typically things come off the still at 80% alcohol, not 80 proof, 80%.
Right, which is a bit strong.
Yeah, it's an acquired taste.
So the caller also talked about scotch, and specifically, can you make a scotch here and call it scotch?
Actually, no, it's a protected spirit. It's a nationally protected spirit. You can't make scotch if you're not in Scotland.
Could you make something that approximates?
Sure.
Yeah.
You could. You just couldn't call it scotch.
Okay.
Same thing with tequila. You can't make it if you don't make it in Mexico. And the one protected American spirit in that vein is bourbon.
Sure. Well, maybe what our caller was, and I wish he had stayed on the line.
Yeah.
The blends, you'll get a blended scotch, and it's much more, there's much more to it than just taking a few single malts and throwing them together. There's also a base, right?
Sure. I'm certainly not a master of that. A lot of the blends, I mean, they work very, very hard on consistency.
Yeah.
Right. So there are variations that you will get in your spirit from the season, from year to year, from the grain you get. If you treat a whiskey well, you preserve the character of the grain that comes through for better or for worse, right? So different farmers, different fields, different years will produce different flavors in your whiskey. Well, for a blend, one of the talents of the master blenders is to take all of these subtle variations and blend them together to make exactly the same thing.
But you add neutral spirits to that, right?
Typically, no.
Really? I thought the blends always had some neutral spirits in them.
They make some corn whiskey a lot, which is it's not barley based.
Mm-hmm.
So some people might consider that a neutral spirit, but no, typically it's whiskey, but it's all about consistency for them.
All right, our guest today is Scott Lunning of Yankee Distillers. Let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Patricia in Wappingers Falls. Patricia, you're on.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
Very interesting information. I have a question. I have a flavored vodka. It's already been produced. The TTB, it's been TTB approved. Then COLA approved, FIDS approved. Well, FIDS is the first step, then TTB, then COLA. That's where I am. However, the distiller that I'm working with, and they're not in our state, they're elsewhere down south, they're really not that cooperative as far as when I contact them for info, so forth and so on. What is the amount of time it would take for my already pre-existing formula that has been FIDS approved and COLA approved to be transferred to another distiller, perhaps yours? I'll contact you after another day, to see about, you know, having everything done, like possibly working with you for your grain. And what I want, I need the GNS to be wheat-based and charcoal distilled, and you just speaking about the vodka. So do you know the answer?
I have no idea what any of what you just said, but go ahead and answer the question.
Well, I try and deal as little as possible with the legal logistical arrangements. That's one of my other partners' main areas. But I can tell you that we operate under a farm distillery license, and a requirement of that is that, as I mentioned, there's 75% or more New York State raw material, which we exceed all the time because that's the way we like to do things. So if you're getting GNS from somewhere, you need to find out the source of that grain.
What's GNS?
Grain neutral spirit.
Ah, okay. All right. Patricia, thanks. This is a very specific question, but your website, by the way, is?
Yeah, yankeedistillers.com.
Okay. And so I assume you can be contacted through that site. Thanks, Patricia. We appreciate it. Let's go to Jim in North Pownell, Vermont. Hiya, Jim.
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good. Nice to have you here.
I just wonder, Scott, do you retail your ryes or do you just sell them out of the distillery?
Actually, we just opened a couple of retail accounts. We're being very, very careful and local. People who appreciate and are good stewards of local craft spirits. So there are a couple of locations in the Clifton Park area.
Okay.
That we retail at.
Jim's in Vermont. Now, is there a part of this farm distillery law that says you can only sell in New York?
The interstate transport of spirits is a murky and complicated area that we are not going to delve into.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Sorry, I asked.
I own 2 acres of river bottom in New York State.
Oh, well, fair enough, okay. Jim. Well, okay. You know how to get here then. Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Well, have a good weekend. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by Scott Lunning of Yankee Distillers in Clifton Park, New York. Jay and Beckett. Jay, you're on.
Yes, can you make rum out of maple syrup? I'm on a cell phone, so I'll just take this off air.
All right, Jay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Technically, the only definition of rum is that it's made from molasses.
Okay.
So you could make a very similar spirit from a maple syrup wash and treat it just like rum, but you couldn't call it rum. And actually, we've been talking to some maple syrup guys, and we were interested in doing that, in checking it out, and we hadn't decided what we could call it yet. So if you have a good suggestion.
Oh, well, he had to hang up because he was on the cell phone. All right. Well, again, your web address is yankeedistillers.com?
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough. 1-800-348-2551. You know, you mentioned the term craft distillers a moment ago, and I thought back to the advent of the craft breweries, which was really, it started around here in the early 80s with Newman, well, late 70s, early 80s with the Newman Brewery, and he was way ahead of the curve. But now there are a billion or something like that local breweries in this country, and a lot of them turn out some great stuff. Craft distilleries, kind of a blooming trend. How high is the ceiling? At what point are you fighting yourselves for a small market?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, typically we think of ourselves as craft brewing was 15 years ago.
Yeah.
There's a couple of significant differences between what things were like for them and what things are like for us. But I would say as far as the competitive landscape, all the craft distillers that I've ever met, we're totally open with each other. We share everything. Nobody's protective. We don't view ourselves as competition.
Eventually, you must, though, to survive.
Eventually, there may become a shakeout. But we think, in the meantime, raising the profile of craft spirits is more important, and experimenting is more important. Challenging the status quo that the big complacent distilleries have established, that's more important than figuring out who's better on a local level.
By the way, big, complacent, and extremely powerful distillers.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Are you worried that at some point they will just say, look, we're going to buy you out and close you down?
I guess we will see how things shake out. When you're dealing with people who have a passion for what they do and are deeply invested in the product that they make as we are, and as all basically all the craft distillers we've met, we think we'll be able to withstand the just blatant onslaught of money.
Well, I do think you probably have a fair amount of time before we have reached the ceiling of saturation.
Right.
All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Al in Amherst. Al, thank you for calling.
My pleasure, my pleasure. I wanted to speak about gin for a minute.
Oh, good for you.
What they used to say is where vodka ends, gin begins. And I don't distill, but I do infuse and compound at home.
Okay, and some people do that. So explain what you do, Al.
Well, basically, what you're doing is you're taking, what I do is I take a low-cost but good-quality vodka, meaning it comes in a glass bottle, not a plastic bottle.
Right.
And I infuse the botanicals that I like. And if it's going to be gin, you need to be using juniper berries.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes you can use any other number of different types of flavors. And then, you know, if you keep going off the deep end, suddenly you're making, you know, more botanical brews than gin.
Yeah, I mean, I had a French one that was heavy on the lavender. Couldn't drink it. And, you, by the way, you could not make a martini with it.
Right, right. And I think the thing is that you'll find very quickly that a little flavoring goes a long way.
Yeah.
But it is kind of a fun thing to do if you kind of say, oh, I really like the flavor of dried orange peels or something, you know, or whatever your other, you know, whatever your other flavor markers are that you want to put in your gin. But it's going to, if you want to make a gin, it's got to have juniper berries in there, but you can buy them at any kind of good spice shop.
And you, can you get these kits, Al, to do your own infusion?
I don't bother. I just, you know, kind of look up. It's fun to look up for different recipes online and or in books and whatnot, and just kind of say what tastes good to me.
Wow, I like it. Al, thanks for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. We got to take a break here. We're joined by Scott Lunning of Yankee Distillers in Clifton Park. Back for the home stretch coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from The Lily and the Rose, a farm-to-table catering company specializing in destination wedding and special events in New York State and beyond with wild edibles, vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free menus. LilyandTheRose.com. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, 100 Waterville Ave, Albany, New York, specializing in local and organic produce, natural groceries, fine cheeses, locally raised meats, and ready-to-go organic meals. HonestWeight.coop. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost 3 decades. ShannonRose.com. And Hudson Wine Merchants, a wine and spirits boutique in the heart of Hudson, New York, offering selections for holiday meals, gifts, and everyday wines, curbside service and delivery available. Raise your glass, HudsonWines.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's a Food Friday, and we're talking distilling today with Scott Lunning of Yankee Distillers, 1-800-348-2551. Scott just tasting his own work, and I got to say that rye is good. Very, very nice. Let's go back to the phones. Damien in Albany. Damien?
Hi.
Yeah, you're on.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
I had a question about the protected designation of bourbon, whereas Scotch and tequila are geographically based. My understanding was that bourbon was not a geographic designation and had more to do with the percentage of corn versus the percentage of rye that's used. Is that the case or not?
My understanding is it's both.
It's got to be made in the...
It's got to be corn-based and 51% or more corn. After that, the other 49% is up to you. That's what it takes to be called bourbon. But then additionally, I believe there is an international geographic designation.
Is it Kentucky?
Well,
but it does not have to be made in bourbon, otherwise
the Kentucky
people couldn't call yourself bourbon.
Yeah, the Kentucky people would have you believe that it's Kentucky based, and the Tennessee people would have you believe that it's Tennessee based. That's not true.
Okay.
We can make bourbon in New York. We make a fine bourbon, we believe, in New York. But my understanding is you couldn't make it outside of the United States and still call it bourbon.
All right, fair enough. Well, thanks for the call. Appreciate the call, Damian. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Tom in Pequog. Tom, you're on.
Hey, I just wanted to thank you guys. It's been a fascinating show, and I have a lot more to think about now when I visit my cabinet.
Ah, good. Well, I hope it's well stocked.
Well, it's going to get better, I'll tell you, after this.
Good, man, good.
Anyway, I'm a big fan of yours, Ray, and I just wanted to point out, I've never heard you so animated.
Really?
Yeah.
I swear to God, I only had a tiny drop of the stuff, so I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm running on fumes. It's the end of the week.
Okay.
But I love talking whiskey, so I appreciate the call. Thanks, Tom.
Okay, take care, guys.
Have a great weekend. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. So the bourbon you guys make at Yankee Distillers is aged about the same as what we have here? You've only been in business a year.
Yeah. We sort of had some pre-work down at Albany Distilling Company. We have a close relationship with them.
Yeah.
And so actually the rye and the bourbon whiskey that we're serving now was made on the Albany Distilling Company equipment by us to our recipes. But basically, yes, we're at about a year on most of our
stuff.
And
you have some put aside for a 5-year-old, 10-year-old, something like that?
Sure.
Okay.
We're going to set some back and see how it develops.
That's nice. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. And we're joined today by Scott Lunning of Yankee Distillers in Clifton Park, New York. Yeah, bourbon is I think that a bad bourbon is not as bad as a bad gin, but there are some bad bourbons out there as well.
Well, I don't like to disparage my
competitors. Well, I'm not saying any competitor of yours. You know, you've seen the bottles on the bottom shelf.
I think there is a clear distinction most people will find if they side-by-side taste test pretty much any craft distilled product made by hand in small batches versus a big industrially produced product, which is actually made in a facility that's more like an oil refinery than anything else. There's a qualitative difference there between batch produced processed whiskeys versus the mass produced things.
Although there are some excellent mass produced whiskeys and Canadian whiskeys, some Canadian whiskeys are fabulous.
If they take their time and they do it right, they can make fine whiskey.
All right, let's go back to the phones. James in Springfield, Mass. James, you're up.
Hi. I just wanted to clarify because I've been telling people for years that the reason they call it bourbon is because Kentucky has the largest reserves of limestone in the water, and that's why the water has that distinct flavor, and therefore they call it bourbon.
Huh. I think
some other place. I mean, I've seen it on, I've read it about it, and I've seen it on some documentaries, great documentaries, but is there any proof to that?
The water is certainly important. All aspects, all of the ingredients that go into making whiskey, all the choices you make can affect the finished taste, the final product. And so certainly there are differences that water can make, and people can claim their specific water makes a special taste. That's great. I believe them. As far as that qualifying it to be called bourbon, that's more of a legalistic distinction. It doesn't have to be made with limestone water to be called bourbon.
Okay.
And one more question or comment, that the distilleries in Scotland that make the scotch, that they use almost singularly Jack Daniel's barrels to age the scotch.
Really? Not all of them? There are a lot of distilleries.
Not all of them. Not all of them, but they want to claim that most of them to be called true Highland Scotch whiskies are aged in Jack Daniel's barrels.
Do you know anything about that?
I don't know about their supply chain, but in general it is true that Scotch whiskeys are aged in used bourbon barrels.
Huh.
And Jack Daniel's being the largest source of that, I would not doubt that that's where a lot of them come from.
Hey, James, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551. We're joined today by Scott Lunning of Yankee Distillers in Clifton Park. David in Woodstock. David, you're on.
Hi. I missed a little bit of the show, so you may have had someone call in about this. But Jennifer, it sounds to me like a corruption of the Dutch word Genever, which is where the word gin comes from. So I just wanted to pass that on to you. And also, just as far as bourbon goes, the best bourbon I ever tasted was a brand called Hirsch, and it was distilled in Pennsylvania. Just thought you'd like to know that.
I've had Hirsch. It's good. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it's too bad they're not making it anymore, isn't it?
They stopped making it?
Like decades ago. And anything you see on the market now, if it's less than $1,000, it ain't Hirsch. It may say Hirsch, but it isn't the
original Hirsch. Maybe somebody bought it, because I know I've had it within the last 5 years, and I'm sure didn't pay $1,000 for it.
Yeah, okay, I bet.
All right, thanks a lot for the call.
Sure.
1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. It's amazing what you learn on this program, huh? Pretty good. Our guest is Scott Lunning, and we talk distilling and spirits, and a lot of people interested in this. I'm kind of interested in the whole infusing of vodka. That's something I've never heard of before.
Well, that's basically how you make gin.
Right, but doing it at home.
Yeah.
An interesting topic.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Ken in Hoosick Falls. Ken.
Hi. I was just curious what you think about the rise of the craft distilling market. Now, how it's affecting the area and the tourism also around here.
Well, I'm very bullish.
Well, true enough.
That's why I started this distillery with my partners. I think it's a great opportunity to do something local, to encourage local agriculture, to make a handcrafted product that, when people think about it, when they pay attention to it, they can distinguish from the mass-produced comparators, right? Mm. And so I think there's a great future in it. All the distillers in the area, we all know each other. We hang out. We trade bottles. And we also offer, hey, if any of your equipment is broken, come to us.
Yeah.
We'll see you through. So it really is a community that is rising.
Thank you, Ken. We appreciate the call. Is there a real commitment? I know that the New York farm distillery law means that you have to have 75% local ingredients, but is there a real commitment to buying local among most of the craft distillers you know?
Yes, yes. And as I mentioned, we're looking to move it even more local. We want to get all of our grain from Saratoga County, which is, still a very agricultural area.
Well, I mean, okay, I get it. But you yourself mentioned that what goes into the bottle is most important. What if you find a locality, it's local to you, it's close, but it's just not that good?
Yeah, no, if the grain is no good, I mean, we'll try it. But if we can't, if we don't like how it works into the process and what we get out of it,
yeah,
we'll go somewhere else.
So the rye in this bottle of rye came from where?
It came out from the Finger Lakes region.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's very good. And you can really taste it. You can taste the rye
taste
in the rye, which is a nice thing. Yep. Let's go to Tom in Johnstown. Tom, you're on.
Hi. I was wondering about home distilling, because in the past I always had heard that it was illegal for people to do distilling in their own homes. But now I'm starting to see kits on the internet and small home still kind of setups. I'm wondering if you guys know anything about the law changing, or
no,
if you know of any suppliers that sell those kind of things?
No, the law has not changed, and it is still illegal.
Is it?
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
So why would they sell those things?
They can label them as, aromatic oil distillation. So they can label them for other purposes, but for the purposes of producing high-proof alcohol, that is an illegal endeavor.
Is this just
endeavor.
A throwback to the Prohibition era where they haven't changed the law?
Well, the law's been very clear for a long time. I mean, it was only in the early 70s that home brewing became legal. We can thank Jimmy Carter for that.
And you started as a home brewer, right?
Yeah, that's right. But the law has not crossed the boundary for high-proof spirits.
Huh.
You can make beer at home, but you can't make whiskey at home.
All right.
With a push towards, all the home brewing and everything, do you think there will be a push towards home distilling, though, too, in the future?
Go ahead. Go out on a limb, Scott.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, there you go. Definitive proof. Hey, Tom, do it at your own risk. That's all I can say.
Thank you very much.
Our legal department says we cannot condone anything like that. John in Barrington, Vermont, you're on.
Hi, this is John. The caller that spoke about the Jack Daniel's barrels was probably from Tennessee. The barrels that are used in the Scotch, single malt Scotch, are exclusively Jim Beam barrels.
Ah, so
there was a feature on 60 Minutes 6 months ago or so, and it gave the details of the making of single malts, 13 distilleries on an island off the coast of Ireland.
Interesting. And so they use Jim Beam.
Yes.
Right. By law, to make the four protected categories of American whiskey, we have to use new barrels. So we can only use them once. But actually, during that quote-unquote use, there's a lot of evolution of the wood. The spirit soaks into the wood. They become more valuable after we've used them. And then they get passed on to brewers or the Scotch people or, furniture makers.
But, John, thank you for the call, and we appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Have a good weekend. 1-800-348-2551. So if you were allowed, and I don't really get why you wouldn't be allowed to use a barrel again to make whiskey. If you were allowed, would it be just as good the second time around?
No, actually, I mean, it would be much different. It's like a tea bag. You can make a second cup of tea from a tea bag, but it's going to take longer. It's going to be weaker. It's going to lose some of that initial punch. And so really the first use of the barrels, they're made from new oak. They're charred. Then you put the spirit in it. It gets its time to interact with the wood. And it's, I won't say it's used up, but its first use is used up.
I recall on this program a year or two ago having some whiskey that was aged in a Samuel Adams barrel. And it was bourbon, and it was very good. After the first sip, you could taste the Samuel Adams.
Yeah. Okay. So the point is that you have to use a new barrel at some point in the whiskey process. But after that, you can put it in anything you want. So you could make whiskey,
age it
for a year in a new barrel, and then go to a sherry barrel or go to a beer barrel or go to whatever you wanted. And there's actually a lot of people doing that.
Well, now, I've seen, of course, going back many, many years, some of the scotches, the single malts, will be in port barrels.
Right.
And it's very good. And you get the essence, but it's not overpowering.
Right. And it takes longer, but there's a lot of back and forth being investigated now in the industry between the brewers and the distillers and the winemakers, and everybody is trying to figure out, how to play in this brave new world of craft spirits.
And marketing, and there's a certain amount of gimmickry as well, but you could actually taste it.
Yep.
Let's go to Rick in Amherst. Rick, very quickly.
Hey, I was a liquor distributor for 20 years, and I've been listening to you and really enjoying the conversation. I think a little bit on the history, excuse me, I didn't know the first name of your distiller that was there. Do you know the history on the barrels? We're going back to Scotch?
No. I mean, okay. By the way, it's Scott Lunning of Yankee Distillers. Anyway, you got about a minute, Rick.
Okay, you got it, and I'll do it in 30 seconds. Just going back, when England basically controlled Scotland and wanted to control the Scotch market, they took away a lot of the distilling stuff. But what did the English like to drink? Port. So the original barrels for Scotch were aged in port, and that's why you see a lot of single barrel bourbons. And if you talk to distillers at different, and I won't mention names, and I've met a lot of these guys, you talk to them about what it came from. The basis was the English stopped them from doing this, so what they did is stole their port barrels, and they were aging their liquor in the port barrels, and that's what basically got it. And to go back to the bourbon question,
yeah,
bourbon legally can only come from those counties. That's why Jack Daniel's is called Jack Daniel's and not a bourbon.
Yeah, well, and it tastes like bourbon. You're absolutely right.
It can be called Tennessee whiskey.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, Rick, we're out of time, but we appreciate the call. Well, what did you think, Scott? Was this fun?
Yeah.
I got to say, everybody in the newsroom, very pleased that you brought a little taste of the Yankee Distillers rye whiskey. Excellent stuff. We enjoyed it. We enjoyed your knowledge, and nice to have you, and best of luck in the coming year.
Great. And thanks so much.
Put a couple barrels aside for the WAMC Christmas party in 2019.
Okay. We can do that.
Support for WAMC comes from Cafe Capriccio. Chef Jim Rua, working to preserve and maintain the traditions of Italian cuisine and hospitality since 1982 on Grand Street in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. Curran Compliance Services, Inc., Greenwich, New York and St. Paul, Minnesota. National compliance and regulatory consultants for life insurance carriers and their distribution partners, currentcompliance.com. And Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. Thanks again to Scott Lunning of Yankee Distillers in Clifton Park. Thank you for listening and for calling. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Barb King. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein. Marshall, get well soon. Jess, thanks again for joining us on Vox Pop. Alan will be back in the host chair on Monday at 2 for Medical Monday. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend. Stay tuned now for news.